Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Clinical Science Podcast. My name is Dr. Panarella, back at it with another episode for you. Happy Thanksgiving. Hard to believe that another Thanksgiving has popped up, but one of my favorite times of the year is the fall or autumn, depending on who you are. And I think Thanksgiving for me has always meant a lot about family, friends, loved ones. And obviously, giving thanks for everything that we have. And if you have loved ones, if you're lucky enough to have loved ones, family, friends, please let them know how much you enjoy their company, love them, what have you, because life is fleeting. It doesn't really feel like it is, but our life, and of course, the lives of our pets, although that's not really what I'm talking about, it can be long, it can be short. We just never know sometimes when it's going to conclude. So share the love as much as possible. And I do hope that you have loved ones out there and can enjoy your holiday. Make the best of it. Today I was going to have a 5-minute rant, but I decided since I'm recording this on Thanksgiving that it's really not appropriate to have a 5-minute rant. I'm feeling a lot more hopeful and generous today, and I hope that that shows. And in prepping for today's episode, it is a natural extension from the episodes that I have already recorded. And the last two episodes, I talked about corticosteroids. That was a two-parter. And I talked about nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories. And then I had talked about heartworm disease prior to that. Episode 24 was heartworm disease. And as you dig deeper and deeper into medicine and drugs and anatomy and physiology, you really have to talk about the cell, because the cell really is the smallest functional unit in the body, in our body, in an animal's body, that we are trying to impact. Because in disease, the cell does get affected through inflammation, through electrolytes, which we're going to talk about, because today's episode is on electrolytes and cell function. And that is probably the most primary thing to actually understand in disease and how we treat disease or illness in an animal. And it's basically the same thing in us. So I went down to the level of talking about the cell. Now, this may not be for everybody. You might say, oh, it's just the cell. It's not that important. It really is important, because that's really how everything is happening in the body. White blood cells, it's a cell. Red blood cells, it's a cell. Platelets, they're their own cells. Hepatocytes, liver cells. Kidney cells of the adrenal gland, which we had talked about in corticosteroids as an example. Brain cells, it's all made up of cells. And how they all interact. So cellular function is actually the most important thing, and probably one of the most basic things for you to understand as you go forward in the practice of veterinary medicine or caring for your pets, even if you're trying to understand maybe what's happening to your pet. And I've also, as a side note, I've really been working on how to improve the audio quality. I've never really been thrilled with the audio quality myself. And as a self-taught podcaster, you have to experiment. You can read everything you want, but it's really the outcome that is the most important. And I strive to make the best audio recording that I can, and I think I'm getting better and better at that. So hopefully, if you have any comments on that, I'd love to hear it. So let me start out by talking about we're talking about electrolytes and cell function, and really what this is a part of physiology. Now, usually it's termed or called anatomy and physiology. I'm not really specifically talking about anatomy. I'm going to talk about part of the cells. Yes, there's cellular anatomy, but for the most part, this is really the physiology of the cell with a few key parts of cell anatomy. I'm not getting into every particular part of the cell, just mostly the membrane of the cell, which is sort of like the shell. So a cell membrane which surrounds the cell, remember these are 3D components, so it's not just a flat thing, it also has depth. So it has height, width, and depth. They're covered in a membrane, and the membrane is composed of lipid, which is, in parentheses, you could think of fat, it's fat, and protein. And the lipid component of the membrane, the cell membrane, is a barrier to water movement. And that's going to, that is important because I'm sure that I've mentioned multiple times here that homeostasis is how the body functions. So movement of water in cells and out of cells is extremely important. And the cell needs to regulate that very tightly. The cell does not regulate that very well, and there's going to be problems. The cells are either going to swell up and burst, or they're going to become desiccated if they're too dry. And then the protein component of the cell membrane is for transport. And there's a lot of molecules that have to move in and out of a cell. For example, there's electrolytes such as sodium and potassium. There's amino acids and a variety of amino acids. And there's glucose, and also there's water. So the protein component is extremely important. So you can see that we're already talking about a system that is fairly complex. Before I go any further, I should mention that most of my information on the cells itself came from Guyton and Hall Medical Physiology. It's a human medical book, but it is probably the most comprehensive information on cell physiology. I've used it, I go back to it numerous times. Yes, there's animal physiology books, but I don't think they're as well explained as Guyton and Hall. So if you're really looking for what we generally would call the Bible of medical physiology, it's Guyton and Hall. So all molecules, and in for the purposes of this podcast, you can think about molecules as ions or electrolytes. They're all going to mean the same thing here. So all molecules, ions, and electrolytes and water in the body fluids are in constant motion, which is an interesting concept. Because I think it's difficult to think of things continuously flowing, even though, for example, I like to use human beings as a ready reference for us. Think about your breathing. Your breathing is constant. If you're not breathing, you're not really alive, or you're going to go unconscious. But you're constantly breathing. You inhale and you exhale. And I know we've talked about this in the hypoxemia, hypoxia episode. But things are in constant motion. And with molecules such as electrolytes and water in the body fluids are in constant motion. That's called diffusion, which is extremely important concept to understand because substances diffuse from areas of high concentration to areas of low concentration. And really, ultimately, what we're talking about here is cell physiology. We're really talking about how the cells are actually functioning, how they work. So if you have a lot of something on one side and a little bit of it on the other side, in the body is going to try to move the molecules or some of the molecules from the high side to the low side. That is just how the body functions. And water and the most abundant substance moving in and out of the cell to balance the cell volume. This is called osmosis. And again, the movement of water is extremely critical. We have lipid-soluble substances such as oxygen, nitrogen, and carbon dioxide. They diffuse directly through that lipid cell membrane. This is a special case. Again, if you go back to that hypoxemia, hypoxia episode, oxygen has to freely move into the cells because it has to come off of the red blood cell and travel into the cells of the body itself. Obviously, the red blood cell is a cell of the body, but other cells. So the oxygen has to go from an area of high concentration to an area of low concentration. But it will go itself right through the lipid membrane. The same with nitrogen. Our air is approximately 78-79% nitrogen, a little less than 20% oxygen, and then there's tiny fractions of other gases. And then also carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide has to freely move in and out, and that has to, those processes of diffusion have to occur very quickly in order to provide oxygen to your body and eliminate some of the carbon dioxide. Remember, we need some carbon dioxide. This is sort of off topic, but carbon dioxide helps the body maintain its pH balance. And you have to have some of that inside the body along with bicarbonate, again, to maintain that balance of acidity and alkalinity of the body. Water and water-soluble substances, such as glucose and amino acids, they move across the cell membrane. But they need transporters. And the glucose transporter in the body is Insulin. So insulin is how cells will be able to take up glucose. And we're going to talk about a little bit more specifics. We're really going to get into the electrolytes in specific now. The cells have specific channels, and the channels are sort of like locks. So this is, if you're looking in your mind's eye for a minute, you have to think about this. It's a key and lock system that there are several different electrolytes in the body, and I have a really great link to some writing, but a good picture of the inside of a cell, which is called intracellular, and the outside of a cell, which is called extracellular. And it talks about, it shows you in a visual representation, yes, using numbers and symbols. Na is sodium, K is potassium, Ca is calcium. And you can see the concentrations because the concentrations are variable. It depends. Sodium, as an example, has a is a high concentration outside of the cell, a lower concentration inside the cell. Potassium has a low concentration outside of the cell or extracellular, and the intracellular concentration of potassium is very high. So, talking about that, there are in the cell membranes potassium channels and sodium channels, and the body is interestingly, a chemical electrophysiologic system where chemicals or electrolytes such as sodium and potassium have charges to them. They have ne some of them have negative charges, some of them positive charges. But the movement of sodium and potassium in and out of the cell through the sodium potassium pump generates electricity. So electricity is how our cells actually function, especially nerve cells and muscle cells are great examples of that. And the movement of the potassium in and out of cells takes a tremendous amount of energy on its own. So that's part of cellular metabolism. The cell has to have a little power plant, which it does inside of it, provide the energy to do things like activate the sodium potassium pump. The sodium-potassium pump controls the volume of the cell, which is obviously, I mentioned at the very beginning, with the movement of water in and out of the cell. It's extremely important because without it, the cells would fill up with water and burst. So we don't really want our cells to burst. So the concentration of these electrolytes is going to be critical to the health and the regular running workings of the body and the cells. The calcium. And also on top of the sodium potassium pump, there's also calcium channels. So we have potassium channels, we have sodium channels, and we have calcium channels. So this is all leading somewhere. Okay, so here's this. I'm looking at the link to the, it's a PowerPoint slide, but it's really nice. It's nicely done. I think it represents very well what's going on outside of the cell, which is extracellular, and inside the cell. So mostly what I'm talking about in this podcast are sodium, which is abbreviated Na plus, potassium, which is abbreviated K plus. These are the elemental signs off the periodic table. So if you're a scientist and you look at the periodic table, potassium is going to be represented as the K. There's calcium, there's magnesium, there's chloride, which I had mentioned, there's bicarbonate, there's phosphates, there's salt, there's sulfates, there's glucose, there's amino acids. And many other things. Also, this diagram also talks about concentrations of oxygen outside the cell and inside the cell, concentrations of carbon dioxide, the pH, the concentration of hydrogen ions in the body, out of the cell and in the cell, and then proteins. Because remember, proteins, those amino acids, are how one of the ways that the cells function. The cell in and of itself is a very complicated system. So if the cells are happy, generally speaking, the body is happy. If the cells are not happy, the body's not particularly happy. I have in the links, I usually don't talk about the links this much, but I think it's important. I have the label for a veterinary fluid of sterile saline, which I'm going to talk about in a minute. And then I also have a link to an article. But really, what I wanted to talk about, it was hard to find a good write-up or, excuse me, diagram on the concentrations of fluids when we're talking about IV fluids. And this has a pretty nice little write-up down about three quarters of a page on the right-hand side, in the right-hand column. There's a nice write-up on the concentrations of the electrolytes in some fluids such as saline, Ringer's, and plasmolite. Plasmolite is pretty commonly used in veterinary medicine, and so is saline. Ringer's not used so much. Ringer's lactate we typically use. So that's that last link. So those are nice links, and you can go ahead and read the article. It's mostly a human article, but it never hurts to even read human articles when you need to. My recording. So the reason I really needed to talk about cells is primarily the electrolytes that I just mentioned, for example, sodium, potassium, chloride, because we frequently have to give intravenous fluids to our patients. So IV or intravenous fluids, there's many different types. I just mentioned a few. I'm only going to focus on one here, and that's what we call sometimes saline or physiologic saline or 0.9% saline. And the 0.9% saline is what's going to be written on the bag of saline. And it's usually going to be abbreviated 0.9% NaCl, which is salt, which is sodium chloride. So basically, it is a bag of salt water. And a reason we have to administer this is if an animal's electrolytes are out of whack, usually meaning that it's not enough, we have to supplement. If it's too low, we have to supplement. So animals that are dehydrated, we talked about in the vomiting and diarrhea podcast, animals are going to lose fluid, right, water, and they're going to lose electrolytes through the diarrhea and or the vomiting, and we do need to replace that. So that's why we give IV fluids. So specifically, let me talk about four simple electrolyte disturbances or imbalances, okay? Remember, everything is in balance. So let me talk about sodium. There's a problem of too little sodium called hyponatremia. Hyponatremia can occur secondary to diabetes mellitus, which is most people would just call diabetes. There is another type of diabetes, but for the purposes of this discussion, we're going to abbreviate it DM. And that when there's so much sugar in the body, now this is unregulated diabetes mellitus, that you are going to get what's called diuresis. You're going to get the kidneys start to crank out a tremendous amount of urine because the kidneys are also getting rid of sugar. And in a diabetic, if the sugar is over 180 to 200 grams per deciliter in the blood, the sugar, the glucose is going to go into the urine. And then the urine is going to be, because the body is trying to get rid of that sugar, it's going to pump out a lot of water. So there's going to be a tremendous amount of urine and there's going to be an increase in production of urine. And that's called osmotic diuresis. So hyponatremia is low salt, well, not specifically salt, but low sodium in the blood. And we just heard that the cells function using with salt, right, going through the sodium potassium pump into the cells. So a lower concentration of sodium in the blood, which is that emia part, right? Hyponatremia is low sodium in the blood. The cells are not going to function as well. Second example I have is what's called hypokalemia. Hypokalemia is a low potassium level in the blood. That's again, important because we need potassium for the cells to function. If potassium is low, potassium is going to be moved in that sodium potassium pump out of the cell into the blood. But if it's too low, when we have to pump potassium back in, again, the cells are not going to be happy and they're not going to function properly. And hypokalemia is often a component of extensive vomiting and diarrhea. Now, I'm not talking about a one-time vomiting or a one-time diarrhea. I'm talking about your dog or cat having multiple bouts in one day or over several days of vomiting and diarrhea. And that in itself, that dehydration, the loss of fluids, and the aberrations, the abnormalities in the electrolytes can be fatal to your pet. So my disclaimer for this episode will be, if you have an animal that is heavy vomiting, multiple bouts of vomiting and diarrhea in a day, those can be fatal. So please see your veterinarian or take your pet to the local veterinary emergency clinic. Okay, now the opposite of the hypo is hyper. Hypernatremia is an increase in the salt content of the blood. And that can happen. It doesn't usually happen in small animals, although I did have a case of what's called salt poisoning. If an animal is exposed to too much salt, an ACL in something, either it gets into food or maybe it can happen in swine and large animals easier, that they consume way too much salt. And then, of course, if we have too much of one thing in the body, it's not good. So salt poisoning can be fatal as well. I did have a case, I believe it was in a beagle. I had a case in a beagle that was urinating excessive amounts of very low concentrated urine, which is not good. And after a consult with an internal medicine specialist and then talking to the owner, it turns out that the pet had gotten into a bunch of salty snacks. And what that salt did was it changed the animal's body such that it had that osmotic diuresis. So in that case, I had to restrict the water, the ability of that animal to drink water for a period of time, and then the body self-corrected. So then the animal went back to drinking the proper amount of water. So salt poisoning is not as big an issue in small animals as it is in large animals. Although, if an animal is not does not have enough water to drink over an extended period of several days, and then it is exposed to water and it drinks an excessive amount of water, which is also true in people, by the way, you can get swelling in the brain and that can be fatal. So if you have any concerns, please call your local veterinarian. And then the opposite of a low potassium is a high potassium in the blood, and that's called hyperkalemia. And that often happens in renal failure because the kidneys have to excrete some electrolytes. And if the kidneys are not functioning properly, the nephron is the functional unit of the kidney, the nephron is not able to properly excrete potassium. You're going to have a buildup of potassium in the blood. And that's also a sign if you're not sure when you're running a chemistry test on an animal looking at internal organ function, that can be one of the signs of kidney failure, is hyperkalemia or renal failure specifically. So I hope this wasn't too basic of an episode. I think it is an important episode to tie everything together over the multiple podcasts that I've done. And I've kept it as short as possible. So everybody, happy Thanksgiving. It's a great time of the year. Enjoy your family and friends. Love yourself. You're the most important thing out there. Remember, you have to take care of yourself, then you can take care of everybody else. It's great to be back. I look forward to talking to you again. Thank you.